Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. More than 157 million people in the U.S. are fully vaccinated. That is about 55% of those who are eligible, age 12 and older. This is according to the CDC COVID data tracker. 3 in 10 U.S. adults still say they have not been vaccinated and don't plan to get a vaccine, according to a new ABC News Washington Post poll. That is 3 in 10 U.S. adults. Less than 300 people in the U.S. are dying from COVID every day. Andy Slavitt, a former advisor to the Biden administration, said 98 to 99% of those dying are unvaccinated. Getting vaccinated nearly eliminates your risk of severe disease. And another reason to get vaccinated, the Delta variant. It's well on its way to becoming the dominant strain in the U.S., with cases doubling every 2 weeks. As of June 19th, the Delta variant was responsible for 20% of new cases. Health officials have described the Delta variant as far more contagious than other strains and a greater risk to unvaccinated people, particularly in southeastern states where vaccination rates are still low. So if you have any questions about COVID and the Delta variant and all the information you're hearing, because a lot of it can be pretty confusing, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. And joining us again is Dr. Monica Gandhi, Professor of Medicine and Associate Division Chief of the Division of HIV, Infectious Diseases, and Global Medicine at UCSF San Francisco General Hospital. Hi, Dr. Gandhi. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you back. I think this Associated Press headline on June 29th really says it all. Nearly all COVID deaths in the U.S. are now among unvaccinated. So many of us have been vaccinated for months, Dr. Gandhi. Can you just tell us more about what we're learning about how effective these vaccines are?
Yeah, it's really quite amazing, the data that's coming out about the vaccine effectiveness against all variants, including the Delta that you just spoke about. There are three studies over the last just couple of weeks that showed Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, and Pfizer vaccines produce strong neutralizing antibodies against the Delta variant. That's one line of the immune system. That's, of course, antibodies. Then other papers, just again from a couple of weeks ago from the La Jolla Immunology Institute in San Diego and also from here at UCSF, shows that our other arm of the immune system, which is called T cells, which actually prevent us from getting severe disease in the future, are also very active after being generated by all of these vaccines against the Delta variant, all the variants. And then third is what we call real-world data, right? What is going on in the UK, Israel, Canada? Places that, frankly, are vaccinating faster than we, those three are ahead of us. And in those settings, Delta variant aside, the effectiveness of the vaccines after basically two doses, I think you need two doses for this particular variant, is 96% against hospitalizations. Canada data just actually got released yesterday. So lots of effectiveness of these three vaccines despite this new variant.
Okay, so that is all very good news. And again, the data shows that nearly all COVID deaths, and it is so tragic that people are still dying from COVID, are among unvaccinated people. Let's talk a little bit about breakthrough cases, because on social media, I feel like every couple days, someone shares a story of being vaccinated who then gets COVID, and it gets so much attention. I think it's important to note that we've been talking about this for a while now. The vaccines are 90% effective, so some people are still going to get COVID. What are we learning about people who are vaccinated but then get COVID?
Yes, this is a great question. So like you said, the 214 deaths a day, which are actually the lowest that we've had in the pandemic, but still every death is avoidable, is occurring among the unvaccinated. In terms of breakthrough infections, we have talked about it before. It's rare. It's so rare. It just gets a lot of attention because no vaccine is 100% effective. They just can't be. And actually, as more and more of us get vaccinated, a breakthrough is more likely to be in a vaccinated person. But what do we know about those breakthroughs? They are generally mild. There was a New England Journal paper just last week that looked at the Pfizer vaccine and looked at people who were getting breakthrough infection. Not only are the cases more mild, but they're more likely to be, you can't transmit because the viral load in the nose is lower, and usually it's more like a cold-like symptom. So milder symptoms, if you have symptoms at all. There are rarely severe disease from breakthrough infections, and it still stands at about 0.002%. And then in terms of deaths from COVID with a breakthrough infection, that's 4 in 1 million at the current moment.
What are your thoughts about the conflicting messages out there? Some saying people should still mask when they are around crowds. Others are saying, you know, make your own decision. There's just a lot of confusing information right now because of this Delta variant.
Yes, I actually think it's been really confusing. And, you know, one thing that hit me and many others just this last week is that it can actually undermine the effectiveness of the vaccines or your messaging around the effectiveness of the vaccines to say that it, in a way it doesn't matter if you got the vaccine, you're still at risk. This has been used by people who are concerned about vaccines to say, oh, look, the vaccines don't actually work against Delta, so what's the point of taking them? And so when the World Health Organization put out masking guidelines 2 weeks ago that said vaccinated people, because of the Delta variant, should still mask, they are talking about the entire world. The entire world, 10.7% of people have received a dose of the vaccine. They're talking about dealing with a population, unfortunately, that does not have global vaccine equity, which we've also talked about. In most places in the U.S., community transmission remains low, especially here in California, and it can be confusing to say wear a mask because of the Delta variant when you've been fully vaccinated, when the CDC does not recommend that. I will say everyone should just do whatever they feel comfortable with masking-wise, but I'm very comfortable with the effectiveness of the vaccines against the Delta.
You were quoted in a Mother Jones piece called Anti-Vaxxers Want You to Believe Vaccines Don't Work Against the Delta Variant. They're wrong. You were quoted along with two other doctors, and you all said that even with this variant right now, the data suggests that vaccinated people are safe.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's really interesting because in a way it's being used by, and I don't like this word anti-vaxxer because I still think we need to educate better, but it is being used, this concern that vaccines don't work against the Delta variant that's being raised by public health officials. It's actually being used by people to say, what's the point? Don't take a vaccine. It doesn't work. So that's why Dr. Horowitz and I and others in that piece said, please keep on understanding and messaging that the vaccines work against the Delta variant.
We have a question from Robert who says, we're told that the vaccines are very effective against serious illness or death, but what about protecting against long-haul virus illnesses caused by the Delta variant?
Yeah, that's a very excellent question because essentially the question is, what causes long-haul symptoms? Usually, and this is really a Nature paper that is probably the best review of long-haul symptoms, it's usually that people get sort of a disordered inflammatory response after severe or highly symptomatic COVID. It's hard to get, or at least it hasn't been associated in well-done studies, to get longer symptoms from virus in your nose, essentially asymptomatic infection. Vaccines prevent severe disease is excellent in terms of our long-term prognosis for long-haul COVID. Now, in terms of COVID, even getting some COVID, the Pfizer vaccine in a public health study was 88% effective against getting any symptomatic COVID. And then that same New England Journal study that I just told you about that was last week that showed the viral load was low, have a breakthrough infection, not only is it, but your symptoms, you're more likely to have a mild or asymptomatic infection, was 90.1% effective against asymptomatic infection. So even any sort of syndrome that is clinically noticeable to you that could lead fundamentally to longer symptoms.
What else are we learning about long haulers? We've talked about this many times when we've had you on the show, and there's so many more articles about it, doctors trying to figure out what's going on, and people who are still searching for answers. And, oh, you just feel for people, brain fog, depression, body aches, just not feeling any motivation. What are we learning at this point?
You know, one thing that we're learning is that what happens is that there's a disordered inflammatory response if you get severe COVID. And there is evidence that a vaccine, if you have long-haul symptoms, can create allow your immune response to become adaptive and ordered, essentially, and can improve those symptoms. And that is not completely clear, the mechanism of that, but this is being reported again and again. And then the other thing I would say is that there are a study going on of fluvoxamine or other medications that help with what really depression also that can happen after having a severe infection. And I would really encourage people here in the Bay Area that we have a cohort going on at UCSF called the LINC cohort, LIINC. My colleagues are involved in that, and you can look that up on the internet and certainly participate in that cohort to help you.
All right. Well, thank you for the email, Robert. Tom writes, how do doctors know that a patient has the Delta variant as opposed to some other?
Yes. So when people have a breakthrough infection after having had the vaccine, and then we'll go back to people who haven't had the vaccine, you can actually, take a sample of the nasal swab and what's called sequence that virus. So you actually, analyze it and ensure what it looks like genomically. You actually sequence its DNA, sequence the spike protein. And then you have a particular set of mutations that essentially looks like the Delta variant. There's about 10 mutations across the spike protein that are very distinctive that are the Delta variant. Those are for breakthrough infections among vaccinated people. Among unvaccinated, the CDC does essentially random surveillance of unvaccinated infections so that we can see how much of those keep on getting to be Delta or Alpha in the spring. And like you said, this Delta is well on its way to becoming the dominant strain in the U.S.
Well, today we are talking about the Delta variant with Dr. Monica Gandhi, Professor of Medicine and Associate Division Chief of the Division of HIV, Infectious Diseases, and Global Medicine at UCSF, San Francisco General Hospital. If you have any questions about COVID and the Delta variant and the confusing information that's out there, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Again, it is so important to emphasize that nearly all COVID deaths in the United States, and it is tragic that this is still happening, are now among unvaccinated people. Dr. Gandhi, I'm wondering what your thoughts are about people who are still hesitant to get the vaccine. I heard an NPR piece this morning, and there was a woman who was actually administering the vaccine who did not get the vaccine. She wanted more information. And then another woman was in the same boat. She got the information, and now she's vaccinated. And so now she's trying to get others who are hesitant to get the vaccine. But, I mean, health workers are working really hard to get people vaccinated, but to think that 3 out of 10 people are still hesitant, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I also think partially that it takes more work than what we're doing to get the one-on-one conversations that are needed to reverse some of the hesitancy. So I think there are 5 things we can do. One is, as you know, actually about 500,000 to 600,000 doses of new vaccine are being given out daily. So one thing the White House is really stressing is we're not through this yet. The biggest mass vaccination program in history, it's not like we trickled down to not giving new doses. And in fact, to be honest, there's been an uptick in vaccine uptake since the messaging around the Delta variant. So maybe it has had an effect, and there was a million doses given out just the week before July 4th. Second is that I think that importantly, sometimes there are people who are still, it is hard to get off of work. You have to have the employers pay for time off to go get the vaccine and for time off after the second dose if people need a break if they're having side effects. Third is community-based messaging, which is occurring in San Francisco. I think it's partially a reason for our great uptake, and that's what San Francisco is really good about, is community delivering messages to community and sitting down with people and doing that one-on-one conversations about hesitancy. And then fourth, it is a new vaccine, and there are some elements of it that there's a lot of misinformation out there and a lot of people saying it's dangerous, and it does require this one-on-one in the doctor's office, sitting down. I have sat down with people and spent 45 minutes, and out of seven people who are hesitant, six people did end up taking the vaccine after we had a prolonged conversation. Hmm. And then there are some people who are never going to take the vaccine. It is political. It has become political, and I'm so sorry about that. And I hope that the fact that it was actually developed under a previous administration, we could get more help from that previous administration to message the effectiveness and safety of these vaccines.
Well, in the AP piece, they tell the story of Ross Bang, a 68-year-old small business owner in Cheyenne, Wyoming, who was eligible for the vaccine in February but did not get it. He tragically died on June 4th after spending more than 3 weeks in the hospital, his lungs filling with fluid. He was unable to swallow because of a stroke. And his sister Karen said he never went out, so he didn't think he would catch it. Why take the risk of not getting vaccinated? I mean, it's so devastating, Dr. Gandhi, that this is still happening, that people are still dying. And I wonder, what are your thoughts about what is going to happen in places where we're seeing rising cases, like Missouri and Arkansas?
Yes, I mean, I completely agree with your sentiment that it is every death since December, frankly, when we had the first authorization of the Pfizer vaccine, that was on December 14th, 2020, in a way has been preventable, except for those that before people could have access to the vaccine. So it is tremendously tragic to have the solution to the pandemic in hand and have still, whatever happened in our country, to have this much politicization that people aren't taking it. And I hope that we can compassionately talk about that. It is tragic. I'm sorry, what was your specific question?
What do you think will happen in the states that have low vaccination rates?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because it's very interesting that it's Missouri, Arkansas, Nevada are the three where we are seeing rising cases and, tragically, actually rising hospitalizations, because there are places where cases are rising, but they are asymptomatic. Those three places, they're actually rising hospitalizations. In those settings, by the way, there are places that even have lower vaccination rates, but we aren't seeing rising hospitalizations, and that's likely because natural immunity is playing out in those regions, like some places in the South and Southeast. So we're not yet seeing rising cases or hospitalizations in places where there were, unfortunately, bad surges before, so there's natural immunity. But going back to these three states, the White House Task Force messaged last week that we're in a phase of what's called control, where you go to areas, and they're going to actually send CDC teams to these areas for three actions. One is increasing testing in the area. Second is treatment in the area for those who are hospitalized. And third is very intensive focus on vaccination and increasing vaccination rates in those three, right now in those three states. So this is the right approach, is to do targeted outreach with the whole CDC team to work on these areas in our country where hospitalizations are still going up. Luckily, our overall hospitalizations and deaths are going down, but our cases have stopped going down because of these three areas.
What would you say to people who might be traveling to these areas? So when you said Nevada, my first image was Las Vegas and all of these places that are open again, teeming with people from really all over the country. And I just found a headline from July 3rd, AP, Las Vegas is bouncing back, but the virus is on the rise too.
Yes. So this was a particular state and region that opened quickly, and Las Vegas, I think it's Las Vegas, and unfortunately, right, there wasn't the levels of vaccination that were needed for that degree of full opening. I would say for those who are traveling to those places, you have to see relatives or you want to go there, that's fine. I would, as a fully vaccinated person, I would probably wear a mask inside if the community transmission rate is above a certain level. We define moderate transmission as 8% test positivity, and that's where we are with some of these regions. So that's why I put my mask back on as a fully vaccinated person. I don't even want a risk of a slight breakthrough infection. I see no point in that. And then, of course, no need to wear masks outside. And keep those two principles in mind if you're traveling those places.
Well, thank you for that. We have an email from Linda who says, my brother-in-law had COVID and will not get the vaccine. Am I safe around him if I am vaccinated? This is an interesting one because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there whose loved ones maybe are not getting vaccinated.
Well, yeah, I actually think that's a very, very important question because the reason for that is natural immunity does protect you from reinfection with COVID. In fact, now there's kind of been five major studies that show that your rate of reinfection after having COVID, at least over this duration of time that we've studied it, is the same as if you've had a vaccine. And the most notable study was from the Cleveland Clinic where healthcare workers who had previous infection declined to be vaccinated, and then they followed them, and they had the same rates of reinfection as their fellow healthcare workers who had not had COVID who were vaccinated at least over 5 months. Mm-hmm. Now, France actually only requires one dose of the vaccine if you've had previous infection, saying, well, it's still circulating, so let's get your antibodies up, which I agree with. Israel, for example, recognizes natural infection as serving as your green pass. And so it's actually a very good question that the CDC is not, to the same extent as other countries, acknowledge natural infection as creating immunity, which it very much does. And that has led to some public health, I think, messaging issues, to be honest. And so every other country, literally every other country, has acknowledged it. So I think that's a fair point to ask about her brother. What would I do if I had had COVID in the past? I would get one dose. I just would. There's lots and lots of evidence that really boosts your immune response. But she is likely, that caller is likely safe around her brother, given the data that I just told you, that reinfection is very low in those who have had previous infection over this period of time that we studied.
Well, I hope that helps, Linda. And if you want to share this show with your brother-in-law, you can find it. It'll be posted in a couple hours at yourcallradio.org. And thank you for that important question. Let's take a call before we go to break. Let's go to Fern in El Cerrito. Hi, Fern. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I am a fully vaccinated person with an autoimmune disease. I take a low dose of methotrexate. How does that affect my protection from COVID?
You know, this is an excellent question because and we talked about this last time on the show, Rose, but there were used to be headlines that were said, oh, you're just not protected if you have any autoimmune condition. That's actually not accurate. And in fact, there's really good data. This was just published on June 19th, that patients with cancer, for example, who are taking different chemotherapeutic regimens, still have good protection from the COVID-19 vaccines. Why? Because our immune response is so complex. It is not just B cells, which produce antibodies. It's not just T cells, which line up against the whole virus and fight it. It's both. It's very smart of our immune system to be this complex and redundant. So someone who's on low-dose methotrexate, I think will have protection. And I will tell you that UCSF is studying this quite intensively. There's a multiple myeloma group, and there are other groups who, if people don't have antibodies against the vaccines, they're turning to looking at T cells to confirm that they have good immunity. There's also four studies going on in the NIH, whether we need to boost people who are on any immunosuppressants in 6 months. So I would say that it's an intense area of focus, but I would feel quite confident with low-dose methotrexate that you have good protection.
And this is directly related to Mary's email. Mary writes, I'm vaccinated, but on autoimmune disease immunosuppressive drugs. I still wear a mask because I have no idea how effective the vaccine is for me.
This is, this is a very big issue at this moment. And one thing to give us some security is that the NIH has recognized that it is important for those on immunosuppressant medications to have a good correlate of immunity, to have a good test that says to them that they're protected. An antibody isn't actually a great test, which is why the CDC doesn't recommend antibodies after COVID-19 vaccines, because they can go down over time, and that's natural, but that may not mean that your other immune responses are intact. So there is a big study now to look at T cells as a correlate of immunity to help answer the questions that your two callers posed. And I don't think it's going to take very long for us to get answers on a good correlate of protection that people can send off.
All right. Well, thank you for that question, Mary. We're going to take a quick break. Today, we are talking about the Delta variant with Dr. Monica Gandhi, Professor of Medicine and Associate Division Chief of the Division of HIV, Infectious Diseases, and Global Medicine at UCSF San Francisco General Hospital. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about how the record heat wave across the Pacific Northwest has impacted farm workers. The United Farm Workers Union say there's been more emphasis on saving fruit than protecting the predominantly Latino workforce. Over the weekend, vigils were held for Sebastian Francisco Perez, a 38-year-old farm worker who tragically died on June 26. It was the first day of the heat wave in Willamette Valley, Oregon. So we're going to talk about farm workers tomorrow. And then on Thursday, we'll bring you an update on Supreme Court decisions. A lot of really important decisions. Some did not get as much attention as others. And so we will talk about that on Thursday. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we are talking about the Delta variant with Dr. Monica Gandhi, Professor of Medicine and Associate Division Chief of the Division of HIV, Infectious Diseases, and Global Medicine at UCSF San Francisco General. Let's go to another caller. Let's hear from Gus in San Francisco. Hi, Gus. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning. I wanted to find out if the doctor, in regard to the vaccine hesitancy, has heard of a company in Southern California who's been in the vaccine business for 20-plus years. I think it's called Avita. And their process evidently takes a blood draw from each person, and then we take about a week in their laboratory to infuse what they called dendritic cells with whatever the triggering agent is, and then they inject it back into each individual. And they claim that they're at the stage one, by the way, so I don't know how far they've progressed, but they claim that there's virtually no side effects with this process.
What is this company called?
Avita. I think it's A-V-I-T-A or A-V-I-V-A-T-A. I'm not quite sure.
Dr. Gandhi, have you heard of this?
You know, I actually haven't, but I do have to say that there is now 10 vaccines out there that work. And any novel idea for a vaccine candidate sounds exciting to me. This is a time of huge technological progress. And the way that the current vaccines work are kind of simple. You essentially put genetic material into a lipid bilayer, like what's called the mRNA that codes the spike protein, surrounded by a little layer of fat, and you inject that, and then your body takes that genetic code and makes the spike protein, and then you actually create a huge immune response to it. And that's how the current vaccines work. And then there's many other vaccine candidates, including a whole vaccine, a virus that they kill and then put in. That's the India product or the Chinese product. And then a protein called Novavax by itself. So all of these are, we are in 2021, and it's a time where new vaccines are being made. And so I'm intrigued, and I will definitely look it up.
All right. Well, thank you for that call, Gus. We have an email from Jeanette who says, a family member in my pod has eczema and does not feel comfortable getting the vaccine because of the unknown effect it has on people with autoimmune disorders. Are there any trials you're aware of that will have results in the relatively near future?
Well, one thing I can say is that there isn't a clear link between having autoimmune disorder or an allergic disorder and not the vaccine's either not working or not being safe. So this is a good example whenever people say, how do we know these are safe? 3 billion doses have been given out of these vaccines worldwide, not just, you know, 320 million doses. You said 158 million Americans are fully vaccinated, 159. So you can multiply that by two mostly and know how many people are vaccinated in this country. But worldwide, 3 billion doses have been given out. People are really tracking outcomes everywhere. And when I think about safety of a vaccine, I think, wow, that's a lot of real-world data that shows us these vaccines are safe. It's been going on since December. So that's what gives me comfort when I, when people are concerned about safety or this seems so new. I tell them how massive of a vaccination campaign this is and how in any country getting these vaccines, you're seeing massive reductions in severe disease and death. And in countries that aren't, because they don't have access, now where Sub-Saharan Africa is everyone's next worry of, area of worry, you see severe disease and death.
Yeah, that's tragic. And I want to ask you about what's happening in other countries after we get through a number of emails from listeners about the Delta variant here in the U.S. What you just said, Dr. Gandhi, will answer some of Cornelius's question, but maybe you can give him a little more info. He writes, my cousin in Southern Virginia has lupus and was advised by her physician not to be vaccinated against COVID. That's pretty incredible. First off, what are your thoughts on that? A doctor telling someone who has lupus not to get vaccinated?
I would say that doctor is incorrect because really, you know, it's those who are immunosuppressed we want to protect. And so maybe the cousin's on steroids, and these are really the patients that we want to give vaccines to. And then again, there's a study going on if a booster dose is needed, many studies actually, at 6 months, so that would be the third dose of vaccine in patients with cancer or other immunosuppressive conditions. There's at least 4 studies going on at the NIH. So I would encourage that person to get vaccinated.
And unfortunately, Cornelius says his cousin was infected a couple of months ago, and he's wondering what else can you tell him to, you know, to convince his cousin to get vaccinated?
Well, again, that I think it's very fair to keep on putting into people's hesitancy questions about natural infection and say, at least at the moment, we still think one dose, you know, especially since the virus is still circulating, will boost your antibodies and prevent you from even getting a mild infection. So I think that is kind of the consensus recommendation, is to at least, even if you've had prior infection, get one dose. The CDC says you can wait, and I think this is fair, wait 3 months after the infection to get the dose, which I think is right. I think you want to wait a little while because you could have side effects with it. So I had a patient who had COVID, and I gave her her first shot after 3 months.
All right. Well, I hope that helps, and good luck in talking with your cousin. We're getting a lot of emails about the study coming out of Israel about Pfizer's vaccine being less effective at preventing the Delta infection. I'll just read from Business Insider. Early data suggests the Pfizer vaccine is less protective against infection from the Delta variant, but it remains highly protective against hospitalizations after infections. Pfizer's vaccine appears to be less protective, according to preliminary data from Israel's health ministry. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so that just happened yesterday. It led to a lot of confusion because 2 studies leading up to this study from Israel, one from Public Health England, showed that the Pfizer vaccine against asymptomatic or symptomatic infection was 88% effective and then 96% effective against severe disease. And then just a study 2 days ago from Canada looked at the Pfizer vaccine, and even after actually one dose, it was 89% protective against all types of infections, and then they're waiting for the results after two doses. So I'm quite sure it's going to be higher because we really think two doses are needed for Delta. So two studies, England, Canada, specifically against the Delta variant, counteract what the Israeli Health Ministry said yesterday. It was not peer-reviewed. It was literally a report. It was literally a statement. And part of it didn't make sense because they said it was 64% protective against infection and 64% protective against disease. And those two numbers being the same didn't quite make sense because that means they'd be no asymptomatic infection at all in that study data set. So I will say that the consensus, at least on Twitter, was, this doesn't make sense to me. Let's see more data. This is not peer-reviewed. Please come out with your data before you put out the statement because you're confusing everybody. So I'm waiting on it. I'm not very convinced that's true.
Well, and this goes back to what we've discussed before, Dr. Gandhi, and that is media coverage of all of this, because something like this comes out and the headlines, I mean, I got breaking news alerts about this.
Yeah, this really worries me about people's mental health, actually, in the context of the pandemic. We have had such whiplash over the last 2 weeks. We're watching President Biden celebrate, I think as he should, the incredible rollout program that has occurred. We are at 68% first dose in the United States. Maybe it wasn't exactly 70, but we were really close, and 70% over those over 30. And he had a very safe celebration, in my opinion, but was really trying to give us hope. And I think that was really appropriate, actually. And then that was Saturday, because that was July 4th or whatever. Yeah, Sunday. And then the next day, there's this really depressing headline without any data behind it, and it's the main headline that everyone gets. And we are just being whipped around, I think, in terms of media coverage. And I just, sometimes it takes a whole hour like this where you just kind of have to explain what seems true and what doesn't. And the media is not doing us a favor. I think it's scaring a lot of people.
Well, exactly. And I think that's why we're also getting some emails from listeners who got the J&J. One listener says, I got the J&J. I'm worried I'm not as well protected. Should I be taking more precautions? Would it be safe for me to get on a plane later this summer to visit family on the East Coast? Or should I play it safer? Can I consider myself, quote, fully vaccinated with just one dose of J&J as the Delta becomes more prevalent?
That's an excellent question. So last week on Tuesday, there was a White House task force meeting that I actually would encourage everyone to just take a moment to watch. It was 30 minutes, and it was with Dr. Fauci and Dr. Walensky about the Delta variant, and you can find it on C-SPAN, and it was very reassuring. And one thing that they said that day was, I think there's going to be data later today on the Delta variant, Johnson & Johnson, and they must have had insider information because then there was a news release later that day that showed us that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine produces strong neutralizing antibodies against the Delta variant. And importantly, and this is a feature of Johnson & Johnson, that the antibody responses and also what are called your T cells, they go up over time. So you get a dose, say, 3 months ago, the antibodies and the T cells keep on going up for a while. And they looked only out to 8 months because that's all the time they had. But 8 months still sustained levels of protection against the Delta variant, against all variants. So that gave me a lot of security in the Johnson & Johnson. The 2 weeks prior to that, there was a lot of people saying, get an mRNA vaccine after Johnson & Johnson. Again, we're just in this frenzy of database, not necessarily database messaging. And that was really helpful to get that data from the company. Dr. Fauci talked about it at the White House task force meeting.
You know, going back to skepticism, Dr. Gandhi, we've done shows about Johnson & Johnson, knowing for decades that asbestos was in its baby powder. We did shows about this. And so for many good reasons, people are very skeptical of these companies and the information they put out. So when you have Johnson & Johnson saying that this vaccine protects against Delta, are you taking that information and then comparing it to independent studies?
Yeah, this is an excellent question because the way that Pfizer has been working is it's put out a lot of its own data because it was the fastest and it gave a lot of doses out for free to Israel, for example, so that they could get data back and put out data. I totally agree with you that real-world information from independent investigators is what gives one the most comfort and really is what should be believed more than a drug company. So going back to that, the New England Journal paper that I keep on referring to last week, you can look it up on Google. You say NEJM prevention and attenuation, and it'll come up right away, looking at the real-world outcomes in the United States of giving vaccines out. That's the paper that showed us the low number of breakthrough infections in those who are vaccinated, the fact that those breakthrough infections were mild, and the third important finding was that the viral load was 40% lower in the nose if you had a breakthrough infection vaccinated versus had an infection unvaccinated. These are the kind of studies. Also, going to the CDC website, all you have to do is put in Google CDC breakthrough infections, and they monitor breakthrough infections in the United States that are severe. The reason that's important is I asked them, are you seeing more breakthrough infections with Johnson & Johnson? And they actually said, I've read to the CDC, but they said, you don't think that if there was a vaccine that had more breakthrough infections, we wouldn't immediately be reporting that to the country? So that was a fair point that they said. So those are the kind of independent adjudications that you want to be looking at.
Exactly. And that also is connected to boosters, because when we had you on early in the vaccine process, you said we should not be listening to the CEOs of these pharmaceutical companies who are going to make a profit from these boosters. We need to listen to the science. So what does the science at this point tell us about boosters?
Two excellent findings, really, since we last talked, that I think gives me a lot of security that we won't need a booster for a long time. One was, I have to explain that you get, you know, B cells and T cells from your immunity from a vaccine. But something that we didn't talk about last time were called memory B cells. These are the B cells that go and sit in a bank. And what I mean by bank is in your lymph nodes or your bone marrow, and they sit there. And if they ever see a virus again, they will come out and produce strong antibodies against that virus. So there were a couple of studies. They had preprints before, but they were published in the last couple of weeks that showed that after mRNA vaccination, you get B cells, memory B cells forming in your lymph nodes. They biopsy people's lymph nodes. Another study that has shown that's true of natural infection too. These memory B cells, and another study by Oregon Health Sciences University, they exposed the memory B cells that you get after vaccination to different variants in the test tube, and they produced the right type of antibodies that would work against those variants. Why? Because they're not, like, thinking about antibodies from an old strain. They're going to produce antibodies to what they see. And that's, if they see a Delta variant, they'll produce antibodies against the Delta variant. That memory B cell paper, even though there's quite a few also memory T cell papers, I think it's very reassuring that those are long-lasting cells that usually are not going to need a booster for a while. Maybe every 10 years. I'm certainly not thinking that we are going to need it every year. And the other thing I'd watch out for is if someone's messaging that you need a booster, check their disclosures, not to be harsh, but like check their disclosures, their financial disclosures, and if they get money or consult for a pharmaceutical company, take that more with a grain of salt.
Yeah, such a good point. I also wanted to make sure we got another question from Yolanda about her unvaccinated child. Is it safe to take her on a 5-hour plane ride to Boston this August? If you can answer that, and then overall thoughts about kids who are not vaccinated yet.
Yes. So I will answer with a personal comment that I have an 11-year-old who is unvaccinated, and I am taking him on multiple planes. And the reason is for two reasons. Number one is that children under 12 are less likely to get the infection, even if with the same exposure. That's been shown in multiple studies. And also, I will ensure that he is masked on the plane, and I will be careful about that, and in indoor settings when we travel. But this has been a hard time. Your child is not more susceptible to Delta variant. There was a really nice New York Times article on this that really went through the data from David Leonard. And I would really encourage, you know, keeping them safe with the mask, but taking having your family vacation.
All right. Well, I hope that helps. Thank you for the question. Let's go next to Nikki in San Francisco. Hi, Nikki. Welcome to the show.
Hi there, Dr. Gandhi. I have a couple questions. And I may have missed a little of what you said about the booster shots, but I have an autoimmune condition, type 1 diabetes, and I had a shot, my two Pfizer shots last January, and I did not have any sort of side effects at all, and I almost kind of envy people who do get some kind of side effect, because I do wonder how robust is my response to the vaccine with an autoimmune condition. I guess that pretty much is my question.
Yeah, I mean, this is an excellent question. One thing I will say is that in the clinical trials, they looked at immune responses of people who had symptoms afterwards, side effects, and those who didn't, and did not see a difference in your immune response. So everyone's different. Everyone feels their T cells growing, and some people don't. And there's not an indication that you have to have side effects that prove that you got a good immune response from your vaccine. And then in terms of any condition, like you just said, in terms of a booster shot, absolutely being studied so actively right now that we will have the answer by the time it's time for you to get a third dose, if that is indicated. Right now, it's only been shown to be beneficial in organ transplant patients, not in other autoimmune diseases, but this is such an active area of investigation. We have a study happening in people living with HIV for the same question. Do you need a booster? So I know that information will be out soon to inform you.
All right. Thank you for that question. Laurel writes, I have multiple sclerosis. What about vaccines?
Same. That definitely get it. Get your two doses. And then the two, we'll be able, certainly the immune center up at UCSF is actively thinking about boosters. But the other thing they're thinking about is studying T-cell immunity. So they're working with a laboratory at UCSF that's doing T-cell, it's a research tool, but looking at T-cells to see if you have good responses. So given whoever your doctor is, please do talk to them about the possibility of monitoring other types of correlates of protection, and also the concept of boosters in the future based on these studies.
Robert shared an important piece in the New York Times writing, here is a reason for infected people to get the vaccine. It appears they may gain stronger and longer immunity into the future. The headline says, immunity to the coronavirus may persist for years. Important immune cells survive in the bone marrow of people who were infected with the virus or were inoculated against it. And we briefly touched on this earlier, but this story is really, really important.
Yes, I told you about the study that was published in Nature that showed that memory B cells form in lymph nodes after you get even one dose of the vaccine. The study that this New York Times article was referring to was another study also in Nature, which looked at people who got bone marrow biopsies after they had had natural infection and again saw those nice memory B cells forming in your bone marrow. And the reason that's so important, I think we talked about this last time, I'm not sure, but there was a study that I think is quite profound that showed that people who had been infected with the 1918 influenza strain 90 years later, this was a study that was published in 2008 in Nature, still had memory B cells circulating 90 years later that could be stimulated to produce strong antibodies against the original 1918 flu strain.
Wow.
So memory B cells can last a long time. And that is why that bone marrow paper that you just referred to and the lymph node paper that I told you about before, I think these are very important papers that just came out to give us security that we'll have long-lasting immunity. Maybe we'll need a booster in the future, but I don't see it soon.
Incredible. The immune system is so amazing. I want to
yeah.
do a show about it. Final question,
yeah.
Dr. Gandhi. We have about a minute left. What about the rest of the world? I mean, some of these headlines are just devastating. India's COVID death rate hits a record in June. Russia's COVID death toll hits a record high for the fifth day. Brazil reported one of the highest COVID death tolls. Bangladesh, record daily virus cases. I mean, these countries are in desperate need of the vaccines. Any updates you can give us?
You know, number one, I think it's the greatest moral failing I can ever imagine that we have highly effective and safe vaccines this December and that anyone has died of it, period, worldwide, when these surges are unacceptable because we have the vaccine. the types of ways to get the vaccine there, immediate donation of doses. This is not occurring fast enough. I know President Biden pledged it, but he hasn't gotten it there. We need immediate donation of doses. We need a waiver of patents. Today, Switzerland, England, and the EU came out against that. Don't agree with that. Completely don't. The U.S. has supported waiving of patents. Technology transfer to these areas. Fourth is surge vaccine to places that need it immediately. So any country that you just said, they get doses first. And then fourth, philanthropy. Anyone who wants to help, talk to your company about philanthropy. This is we're going to look back on this, and it's going to look terrible that we let it rage when we had these vaccines.
Right. And a couple other headlines. Record number of cases recorded across Africa. Yes. It's just devastating that this is happening.
It's unacceptable. It's all I can think about. So the WHO is trying hard, but it really does require rich countries to step up.
Yeah. Dr. Monica Gandhi is professor of medicine and associate division chief of the Division of HIV, Infectious Diseases, and Global Medicine at UCSF San Francisco General. Dr. Gandhi, thank you again for spending the hour with us and taking everyone's questions. Thank you so much for all the great work you do. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. If you want to share this show with friends who are still hesitant about getting the vaccine or have questions, it will be up soon. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And I hope you can join us tomorrow. We'll talk about how the record heat wave across the Pacific Northwest has impacted farm workers. On Saturday, vigils were held for Sebastian Francisco Perez, a 38-year-old farm worker who tragically died on the first day of the heat wave, June 26th, in Willamette Valley, Oregon. What will it take to protect farm workers? Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.